Hey, good day, everyone. It is the Viral Volley Podcast, and we have this version of College Volleyball Weekly, quarantine edition, but deep in a quarantine edition at this point. I think our last discussion was literally in early April, but it's great to have our consortium of coaching intelligence. That's Jay Hossick of George Mason University. We've got Dan Fran of Lewis University, who is not exactly the role model PSA right now, driving live on a Zoom call. So, you know, if something happens, it's documented.
That's right. Oh, jeez.
Hey, lots of traffic right now. Lots of traffic. So,
jeez, knock on wood.
Well, we've got a few topics because a lot of news has happened. And gosh, even with all this COVID going on, you know, there are definitely a lot of things to talk about. But the most recent things that mainly has been affecting NCAA volleyball has been the NCAA waiver that was proposed by the FBS schools. And if you're not familiar with the FBS, it's the Football Bowl subdivision of schools. It's a big, the largest conferences and the commissioners that are all Division I. They wanted to waive the amount of minimum D1 programs allowed. And I'll have one of you guys talk about what impact that would have had on volleyball and men's volleyball particularly.
Well, go
ahead, Jack.
I was just going to say, having come from a place like Penn State where they're one of the biggest programs in the country, I can tell you right now, you know, a lot of these schools, everybody that is not aware of how college athletics works, a large portion of a lot of those bigger schools, those bigger time programs, a large portion of their income comes from football. And, you know, a lot of them run in a deficit. Let's keep that in mind as well. There's not many teams that run on a surplus. And so when you let's just use numbers that are easy to understand. If you make $50 million a year from your football program with merchandise and parking and ticket sales and all the concessions and a whole nine yards, it's a large chunk of money. And athletic departments depend upon that money in order to run their athletic departments. So, and all the other programs that come along with it. But then when you start looking at all the COVID stuff, all of a sudden everybody started freaking out a little bit. And they're like, well, wait a minute here. Now we may not have football. It might be on a much more reduced scale. And now all of a sudden you look at the $50 million that they were going to raise, and then you had to maybe subsidize another $5, $10 million, depending upon your program scope, to be able to cover the ends and make them meet. Now when you look at maybe only making $25 million or maybe only $20 million, now you got to fundraise $40 million plus. That's a lot of money to raise. That's a large nut. And so a lot of schools, and not necessarily the bigger ones, it was the smaller ones. It was the mid-majors that were really going to take a hit. They were saying we need to drop below 16 for a short amount of time, for a couple of years, a few years, if you will, so that they could kind of recoup their losses and then bring those programs back. Well, you know, once you get rid of something, it's really tough to bring it back, especially when things kind of go by the wayside, your memory kind of fades a little bit, and you're like, oh, well, we haven't had, you know, tennis for so long. Yeah, we kind of like the money we have now. Let's see if we can make the other programs better. And so a lot of programs are really in a lurch. They were very scared about the future of their programs. And some schools did drop some programs. It's really sad. However, those athletic departments, those directors, were all of a sudden making the push to the NCAA, hey, let us drop down below 16, the required number to remain Division I. Thankfully, the NCAA said, no, we're not going to let you do that. You've got to find other ways to make income. You've got to find other ways to raise money. Kudos to the NCAA for stepping up and saying no, because that could have easily been a slippery slope. And it didn't guarantee, again, it didn't guarantee that programs weren't getting cut. There are some that did, unfortunately. But at least the NCAA stopped the majority of them from dropping way below and not possibly bringing those programs back in the future.
The other part with that is there was a lot of advocacy on behalf of the Olympic sports. You know, you had the ABCA, you had swimming's coaches coalition, you had lacrosse's coaches coalition, wrestling's coaches, all these associations kind of got together and did these signature petitions, and the big names for each of these, like John Sproul for us, and all these big names got out there and talked as well, and I think those voices kind of really helped towards the NCAA and helping them see clarity, hopefully, in terms of making that decision. The other thing not to forget about is, I mean, all these mid-majors lost the basketball money. So you lost all that basketball money from the NCAA tournament. So they were scrambling. But the interesting thing is, you continue to see time go forward right now, is that these mid-majors are now going, wait, I don't want to cut sports because we can tuition drive a little bit. So even though most D1s aren't tuition driven with their numbers, they can be a little bit. If I'm bringing in 4.5 scholarships on men's volleyball and I got 20 kids, I'm making money on that sport. Why would I cut that sport? And so I think you're seeing some mixed things with that about, hey, if it's not a sport that is crushing me scholarship-wise, I can make some money with that and kind of offset some costs a little bit. So it's interesting as this move forward. Now, if we don't have football in the fall, then we're all having a different conversation with a lot of these mid-majors, and that's a wholly different thing. But I think they'll find a way to get it off the ground. So,
well, it's interesting about how all that unfolded. You know, I actually had gotten a message from John Sparrow of UCLA and the USA Men's National Team, and asking, like, can we get this out there? And I noticed that on the volleyball end, there wasn't a whole lot being put out there. So I said, well, this was a Friday night. I was able to coordinate a call with Sparrow and Kathy DeBoer, who did video statements on how this was going to impact everything. And, you know, thank goodness we were able to rally 100,000 signatures on the SaveCollegeSports.com website. And, you know, it went up in front of the Division I Council, and they denied that request. And so everyone was tuning out, hey, we're successful, we got this. I got a call at 11 o'clock that night. So I was like, it's still not done yet. We still have to put it in front of the Council of the Presidents, which was meeting the following Wednesday. So he's like, we still have to put the pressure on. And everyone had took a sigh of relief saying, oh, we're done with it. So, but thank goodness that President's Council affirmed the decision by the NCAA Division I Council. So we've bought some time. So, you know, kudos to all the people that stepped up, signed the petition, and put pressure on all their administrations.
Yep.
You know, one of the I definitely got to give props to the council chairwoman, Grace Calhoun. I guess she's the athletic director at UPenn or Pennsylvania. She's quoted as saying, we will prioritize student athletes' well-being and opportunities balanced with reducing costs associated with administering college sports. But a blanket waiver of sports sponsorship requirements is not in keeping with our values and will not be considered. So she took a strong stance, which, I mean, great for athletic programs that could have been affected.
Well, and she's from an Ivy League program, and you look at some Ivy League schools, Harvard, Princeton, they've got 30-some-odd-plus athletic teams in their campuses. That's huge. And a lot of those programs are really not well funded, and really are small in scope, and could have easily fallen by the wayside should an athletic director be looking for a way to make a couple of bucks here and there to save. So kudos to her. That's awesome.
Any parting thoughts you want to add in there, Dan, before we jump to our next topic?
No, I think we got more things that are going to come up. I'm just saying this. I think as this unfolds with the NCAA and schools and all that stuff, I think you're going to see some interesting things come down the pipeline over the next 2 months. I just think we're in the middle of it, and it's still going to keep going. So,
well, at least from a more geographical standpoint where I'm at, or a geocentrical standpoint, you know, my sense is we'll be lucky to have athletes on campus come September 1 of this year. I don't know what it's like in your areas, you and a Fairfax Jay and Dan in Chicago, but it's not looking very optimistic here on my end.
I'll speak from ours. We are inviting our athletes back on campus in the fall. I'm not speaking on behalf of George Mason, but I can tell you they are essential students, so to speak. The athletes are of all sports. And I think it's going to be at a minimal occupancy. I don't think it's going to be a full occupancy on campus. I think they're allowing a lot of the classes that were offered in the spring that were online. I think they're going to offer a large selection of those as well. But I think the athletes are going to be invited back along with the essential students, maybe international students that don't have the ability to be, you know, around the world and taking classes. And so I think there's going to be about 30-40% occupancy on campus. And then as the year progresses, I think they'll just keep reassessing. And hopefully by the fall, next fall of 2021, I think things will resume back to normal should everything hold the way that we all think it's going to. But yeah, I think that is that's going to be kind of par across the board. There might be a few that don't. There might be a few that do. I know that the Cal States, I think, are saying no classes in the fall whatsoever. They're all online.
Except that Cal Poly and Long Beach State. Andy, really? Lee, the athletic director, you know, I questioned a tweet that he sent out, and he responded right away. He's like, wow. We are going to have students here in the fall.
So Long Beach State will have students and athletes, but Northridge will not.
Right.
Wow. Interesting.
Last I had read, I mean, correct us if we're all wrong, but I think Cal Poly was another one, because obviously I've been getting more into the beach scene, and they're going to be getting their people back on campus as well. And this is all, you know, just coming across articles I'd seen, but not verifying.
Interesting.
How are you, Dan?
I think with Lewis, they're trying to have students on campus. I think a lot of small schools like us, you know, those kids on campus are important. So that's the plan right now, you know, is the ability to have kids, and they're going to put a lot of things in place, COVID rules and, you know, sanitizing stations and all the things and all to protect the kids and the student athletes and all that stuff. But everything I'm hearing from all the GLVC schools and the MEVA schools, that they're trying to look to have kids on campus in the fall. Now that could shift or change over the next month or two, but I think every state outside of California has that vision, I think, to a point. You know what I mean? I think California had a little bit different plan, and I think that you're already seeing that shift a little bit in California. And so it'll be interesting to see where we're at in August. But my wife, they're still planning on coming back August 16th with their athletes and, you know, starting their season. So
now, just for our listeners and viewers that don't know what your wife does, what does she do, Dan?
She keeps Dan in line.
Are you paying the toll road on the expressway there?
I'm just cruising along, man. I'm great. So,
what does your wife do, Dan? Is she a coach as well?
My wife is the women's volleyball coach at Lewis.
There you go. I just had to get that out there. So, hardcore nepotism at Lewis. No. Oh gosh, you guys both do great work out there though. Hey, let's jump to our next topic though. Another big piece of news is volleyballmag.com, the original host of College Volleyball Weekly after the Net Live retired, was reacquired by the co-editors, Lee Feinswag and Ed Chan. Any of you wanted to jump in on any thoughts that you have on the reacquisition?
Go ahead, Dan, if you want.
I love Chan and Lee, so I think it's great. Those guys have been great. They picked up Volleyball Magazine a few years and were running the publication stuff and everything. I thought it was awesome. And so certainly don't have anything negative towards B1440, but I think BB Magazine's in a great spot. So,
yeah, Feinswag and Chan have both taken the mantle and ran with it a little bit, and I think – having people that have a vested interest in it for the right reasons, I think that's always a good thing. So congratulations to Ed and Lee for getting it back under your umbrella. And, I look forward to more great things from them coming up in the years to come.
Yeah, I was excited that, that it was going to remain back in their hands, you know, because there's a possibility that it could have gone other ways under the P1440, leadership, whatever they're deciding to do in the future. But they both, Lee and Ed, have a very, very high level of passion for the sport. Unfortunately, there's only two of them. So the fact that they've got some guys stationed and in different areas of the United States, they're able to get at least some of the coverage there. But they're trying their darndest to keep volleyball in the public eye, which is wonderful. And that's not only the collegiate beach, but men's, women's, indoor. You have juniors, high school, international, FIVB, and this is all between two guys. So, I give them a large shout out for the efforts they're doing, and, you know, definitely am on board with helping them out, continuing to help them out, because in full disclosure, I handle some of their social media and get some of their interviews as well. So, I'm excited at what this new year will bring for volleyballmag.com, even in this COVID culture time. So, and this other stuff that's going on, which I'm sure we'll discuss a little bit later.
Yep.
I know that you guys love this topic, and Dan has now, I think he's going to copyright his Super Senior! conference, which is
super teams.
Yeah. So with the NCAA granting another year of eligibility for those athletes affected by this COVID pandemic, we're going to be seeing some super teams with some super seniors. And I've confirmed a few, which I've sent you guys in some of the notes, but I'm curious as to your thoughts on them as coaches that actually have to compete against these teams that could be coming out within 2021.
Well, here's the problem. You've got all these teams that are stacked to the gills with All-Americans, All-Conference players, you know, starters. I mean, it's every coach's dream. Here's the nightmare. Nobody's traveling to play anybody. And if it is, it's minimal at best. And so you want to see all these matchups of the super teams of Lewis and the super teams of Ohio State and the super teams of Long Beach and Hawaii and Irvine and Stanford and Penn State and Mason, all these places, and Princeton, and nobody's going to be able to play anybody. And that's the bummer. And, yeah, there's going to be interleague play. I mean, you're going to see the teams play good teams still. It's not like you're not, but – it's going to be really regionalized in terms of who's going to see what. And that, I think, is the real loss of all this stuff is, you know, you got these guys coming back and they maybe want to play against the best competition in the country. And if they're not seeing the top teams because your conference may not be as strong as it was last year or the year before, now all of a sudden you're not getting a chance to see those teams play other great teams. And I think that's the big loss if there's any, you know, dark lining around that cloud.
I've got my consultant here with me. This is little Joey right here. That's Mr. Dan and Mr. Jay. Say hi, Joey.
Nice.
Hi, Joey.
What's going on, kid?
Yeah. On top of that, think how hard that's going to make it for the selection committee. You'll have all these great teams, but they're not all going to play each other. So it's going to be like, how are you going to do RPI? How are you going to do strength of schedule? I mean, they already had a hard enough job, and now you got five on the committee, and then they got to figure out this on top of it. But to spin it the other way, what a great year of volleyball. You know what I mean? We're going to have some great teams. You talk about Hawaii and Santa Barbara. You've got, even at our conference, you know, I think McKinney's got some kids coming back. Ball State might, Purdue might. We've got some guys coming. I mean, there's going to be some awesome volleyball across the country and some high-level volleyball too. And so, you know, even if we don't get some of those great matches, it'll be a great opportunity to see some high-level competition with some teams. And I'm excited for it. Crossing my fingers that we're all able to do it when it comes time to get there. You know what I mean? In terms of that. So.
Right. Well, I've got some names down from a very official source called Volley Talk. So I'm going to just drop them and get your guys' thoughts on them. I know that this is all just through word of mouth and hearsay. So, like, McKendry has Wyatt Dimke middle, Zach Schnicker in opposite, and Lucas Galifos, the other middle, coming back. And then for Lewis, I got maybe familiar with some people on that team. Ryan Coonan coming back, apparently, according to Volley Talk. So your big guns back, Dan. You got to be excited about that.
I'm never going to be sad about my 6'9 player of the year coming back to play volleyball. Do you know what I mean? So, Bouget's coming back too, so which is great. So,
oh, so. Wow. Got your pins back. I like it. Go ahead, Dan.
No, I was just going to say, I think McKinney also picked up Evan Giebert, super senior, doing his master's. He was an all-conference, all-American from Loras, Lourdes. It's an NAI school. Mm-hmm. So a name you wouldn't know about that they picked up kind of under the radar in terms of that. So,
well, jumping to another conference in the MPSF, so Grand Canyon has Ian McClain coming back, a middle blocker. UCLA has Austin Matautia. They're outside, the transfer from Hawaii. And then BYU, as of now, only has Will Stanley coming back. Any thoughts on those super seniors?
I think Stanley's going to be obviously a welcome addition back to the program. Anytime you have an All-American setter coming back in your gym for another year, that's a no-brainer. What about our boy from Barton, Mandalaris? Guess where he's going?
Oh, no.
Well, go ahead, Dan. Tell him where he's going.
Well, I don't know if anything's concrete, so I can't say anything. You know what I mean? So I think he's still trying to figure it out, Jay.
All right. We'll keep it quiet. But, yeah, he's not remaining at Barton. Let's put it that way.
He's not. I think he's looking to play somewhere. I don't think I've got. I don't think I've got it. Just so you know. Otherwise, I'd flat out tell you. You know what I mean? So
let's just put it this way: Dan will not be very happy if he goes. Yeah. I think he's gonna go.
Oh, okay.
So, hey, don't forget. Don't forget about Santa Barbara. I'm gonna shift gears.
We're going westward. Don't believe me. Now, we've covered the other conferences, but now we go to the Big West, and this is where I think the biggest impact is going to be. You have UC Santa Barbara's four top guns coming back, and Casey McGarry, their center, Keenan Sanders in middle, Rory McFarland outside, and Randy DeWeese all coming back. The only problem they're going to have, the question mark, is their libero. I don't know if he's coming back yet. Grady Yuld. And then there's still Brandon Hopper and Spencer Frederick. They're backup opposite. So
Santa Barbara is going to have, I think, last time I checked, 43 guys in their gym because they have a large class coming in this year. They graduated a large number of guys, and now a large number of those guys are coming back, and he's already got a large roster. So Rick's going to have a real fun time in that gym next year. You want to talk about dogfights, that place is going to be hectic.
And then Hawaii making the big announcement. Colton Cowell, the outside, Rado Parapunov, James Anastasiades, and big middle Patrick Gassman all coming back.
That's a dangerous team. And kudos to Pat Gassman. I know there's been a little bit of a story going around about him going out about the island and helping out the people in need. You know, I Dan and I had the pleasure of working with that kid a little bit over the years. He's a real nice young man, and it's just real cool to see that he is fitting in with that culture and the lifestyle, the Ohana lifestyle, and it fits Pat real well. So kudos to Pat. Nice job out there. Way to take care of your own and take care of the people surrounding you. That's a neat thing you're doing.
Anything to add on the Big West Super Seniors, Dan, since I know you like saying Super Seniors?
Oh, I'm so sad I don't get to play Santa Barbara. Unfortunately, that regional thing, they were one of our games that were coming out to us, and we're not going to get to play them. So I was excited about that match for sure. I do think we still get Long Beach. They're coming out to our place, and we're actually still headed to Hawaii, which should be a great match in terms of that. Just so a couple big matches there. But like I said, you're going to see some great volleyball. Santa Barbara and Hawaii for sure, and Long Beach will be good. And UC San Diego. I mean, those guys. Is their setter coming back?
Yeah, I tried to squeeze that information from an inside source, and I got no love. So I'm going to keep working it, though.
I heard he was. I heard he's coming back. So if he's coming back and Kevin's coming back and those guys, they're going to be good too. Do you know what I mean? So.
Yep.
Sure. What about your Irvine boys? What about the big middle? Is he coming back?
He is back. He got accepted into a master's program. So Scott Static, the, leading blocker in the nation this last year, leading in solo blocks as well, is coming back. And that's the only one that's confirmed. Not so sure about the rest of the guys, but I don't think they saw significant playing time anyways. So I think with more experience on their redshirt freshman, Joel Schneidmiller, and then the, I forgot the other kid's name, Akil Tangatour, you know, I'm liking how Irvine's going to look, but unfortunately we're in the Big West with the super loaded, super senior, super teams. So.
Super!
think about the year after. All these guys are going to graduate. You know what I mean? And so, and what it'll look like then. I mean, we'll have this great year next year, and I'm curious to see what happens the year after that. Does it drop, or does it all these kids behind them make it even better? You know what I mean? In terms of that. So I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Dan, that is like the most perfect segue into the next segment. We're going to talk about the 2020 top recruiting classes that came out on volleyballmag.com. And I'm going to read off the top 10 and the honorable mentions, but we're going to discuss who are the winners, the losers, and who stays the same after I list them out. So number one, Long Beach State. Number two, UCLA. Three, UC Santa Barbara. Four, UC Irvine. Five, Loyola. Six, Princeton. Seven, Pepperdine. Eight, Ohio State. Nine, Hawaii. 10 was a tie, BYU and Lewis. And the honorable mentions, USC, George Mason, Stanford, Grand Canyon, and Penn State. All right. What do you guys think about this, the top 20 recruiting classes and where the programs stand?
So I'm going to highlight a couple of players coming into each program just because I think those are the kids that are going to make some impacts. I think Clark Godbold, the outside hitter going to Long Beach State, is obviously one of the top, if not the top player in the country going there. And the German, Simon Torwey, 6'10 right side from Germany, The kid is a beast. Long Beach is going to be stacked for the next few years. Ethan Champlin going to UCLA and Miles Partain are probably the two jewels in that class. Ethan's a smaller outside hitter. They got him listed at 6'3", but I think he's more about 6'1", 6'2", maybe. But can play the game all the way around. And if he doesn't pan out on the outside, he could be a libero for them in the future. He's that good of a ball control guy. And Miles Partain is just an all-around good player. Santa Barbara, again, one of the biggest classes in the country. You got a few guys in there I think are going to make an impact. Reese Barnett, Kevin Barnett's younger son, the opposite going there. He's a 6'5 lefty. Kid's got a whip of an arm. They have a small outside hitter named Sam Collins going there. He's about 6 foot at best, but man, can he play the game all the way around. A lot like Taylor Crabb back in the day. They got a couple of middles, Dane Johnson and Reese Frank, that I think are going to be some kids to watch for the future. We go to Irvine, the one kid, Francesco Sani from the East Coast out here in our backyard. The kid is legit going to be a starter in his first year. 6'8", live arm, jumps well, super fiery competitor, and an incredibly good student. The kid is a great young man. We go to Loyola. I'm not going to talk about anybody in particular, but they've got 12 guys coming in. 12 guys. How are you going to contain that? It's unreal. They've got a ginormous class. It'll be interesting to see where they pan out. Princeton has got Ben Harrington, an outside hitter from Illinois, who's legitimately one of the best young guys coming up. And they got a center coming in, Henry Redbush, who's probably going to take over the reins starting next year. He's that good and will be a kid that will be a pain in my neck for the next 4 years. Pepperdine, Joe DeLuzio, 6'6 outside hitter from Florida. The kid's legit. And Bryce Dvorak, son of young Dusty Dvorak from way back in the day, the Olympic team, if you remember his name. That's going to be a fun team to watch. Ohio State picks up a kid named Jacob Pastor. Outside hitter, can also play opposite, 6'4", jumps a ton, and has got a super live arm. And they got a setter named Noah Platfoot, who's going to be really good when he comes in. He's going to push the guy that just started last year as a true freshman. It's going to be interesting to see that battle. Hawaii, Austin Buchanan, 6'8", setter. His mom is the coach for University of Idaho's women's program. Interesting jump going from Idaho all the way out there to Hawaii. That's going to be fun to watch. Brigham Young, their setter, Zayo Meyer, is going to be legit. He's a kid from Illinois. I know Dan knows who that kid is. He's a legit setter who's going to who might have started next year, but except Stanley's coming back. And then you look at Lewis. I won't talk too much, but you got Connor Keaton and Keaton Long coming in. Those are two really, really solid kids that I know a lot of coaches were hot and heavy after, and they decided to make the journey over to Romeoville. You look at USC. I don't know anybody on them. George Mason, we picked up a young man named Omar Hoyos, 6'7", outside hitter from Puerto Rico. He actually lives in Florida. He's on the Puerto Rico Nash team. And Penn State picked up a setter from SCBA, a smaller guy, 6 foot maybe, but he's got really good hands. There are going to be some good players going all around the country for sure. But that's who I've got as the top players going into each one of those programs.
Quite a breakdown, Jay. Dan, I mean, what you got to compare with that there?
I have nothing to compare to what Jay just did, other than the fact that he did a great job, and I agree with pretty much 99% of that right there. The thing, I'll have you take a different spin on this. So you got this ranking of top, 10 teams, honorable mention teams at the recruiting class, and it piggybacks off of, ultimately the Fab 50 and the All-American high school kids. And it's always interesting to look at which kids become performers in college, and which kids were under the radar, like this kid never made a Fab 50. Do you know what I mean? In terms of that. And so, and it's always, I mean, Jay highlighted all these kids, and it'd be interesting to come back after a year or two and go, okay, these are these kids Jay highlighted that were supposed to be good. Three or four of them were awesome. Two or three of them kind of fizzled out. And two or three of these kids we didn't talk about at all that were on these programs end up being, you see the same thing happen at college basketball players to the NBA. You know what I mean? So we talk about this. Where they're good at one stage doesn't always mean they're good at the next stage. And you see these guys blossom or bloom that might be under the radar. And so, I think there's some dark horses in that group that that some of these recruits got picked up, and some might be maybe a little bit overinflated in terms of where they're really good in high school. But
we lose you, Dan?
Uh-oh. He hit a flat spot. Well, until he comes back, I can continue what he's saying, because he's absolutely right. A lot of these kids are the ones that everybody knows because they're the big names. Everybody's claiming them. And Dan, I know you're back, so I don't know if you want to continue, but you know, he's absolutely right. A lot of those kids were kids that maybe only a couple of coaches were really going after, and maybe they didn't specify they wanted to go to one or two places, so they didn't get the love that everybody really, you know, maybe could have given them. And a lot of those kids pan out to be great players. I mean, there's a whole ton of All-Americans over the years that were not on these lists back in the day, for sure.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Hey, you guys got me back? Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yep.
You didn't get pulled over or anything, did you, Dan?
No, I'm home now. We're great.
Oh. Uh-oh.
I think Baby Ray unplugged the Wi-Fi network on Coach Friend over there.
Oh, that's awesome. All right, what's next, Rob? What do we got until he comes back?
Well, he's back. We've got Dan live. You may want to finish that thought out, Dan. You went dark on us there.
No, I'm safe in my driveway, endangering no one, myself, or anybody on the road anymore. You know what I mean?
Well, any closing thoughts on the top recruiting class of 2020 for both of you?
Dan?
No, I'd be curious. It'll be interesting to see which of these kids find a way to make an impact this year. You know what I mean? Like, you got the super seniors coming back, and I mean, I think there's a few guys. You know, I think of Dasani find a way on the court. Does Clark Goldberg find a way on the court? Like, which of these guys are able to kind of mix in? You know, we got a couple of incoming guys. Maybe one of those guys mixes in and makes an impact with this super senior group. And so,
oh, there we go again.
So here's what another thing I think that Dan's talking about. You've got these highly touted seniors coming off their year, their last year supposedly of club in high school and going into college. That jump for a lot of them is like being a 15 or 16 year old playing against your 18 year old club team. And, you know, a lot of kids come in thinking they're going to be the guy. You know, maybe they were the guy in club, maybe they were the guy in high school. And all of a sudden they get to college and they walk in the gym for their first day and they're like, wait a minute, I used to be really good at this game. And now all of a sudden I'm struggling to get a ball past the block. I'm struggling to get a serve that can BB off somebody's arms. I'm struggling to pass a serve that's coming at me at 15 miles an hour faster than I'm used to seeing, because you can't recreate that in those high school gyms or the club gyms. And as much as they want to think that they're at that level immediately, very few are. There are some that walk in and they're really good right away. They're just amazing. Micah Ma'a comes to mind, Micah Christensen. But there's a lot of them that take a year or two. And those are some of the bigger names. A lot of those guys took a year or two to get to the speed and power of the game that's played at Division One. And that's okay. That's how it's supposed to be. That means you're running your program the right way. And that means you're recruiting the right players and training the right players and bringing in the right kids underneath them behind to be able to make the program work. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see which one of those guys starts next year, especially with the super seniors in front of them in their position. That's going to be where the real rubber meets the road. Is Simon Torby going to take over the right side? Who knows?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If that's the case, Torway at the right side, that means Simone Anderson gets to go back to the middle. That makes Long Beach deadly.
Yeah, real, real bad problem for Long Beach State, too. I feel for them.
One of the final topics of the night is, we actually mentioned it a little bit earlier, but Pat Gassman of University of Hawaii, not only coming back for another season, but doing some incredible good in the islands. Now, Jay had already mentioned that he was delivering food to COVID-affected families on the island of Oahu. But on top of that, he also was assisting with a high school graduation, handing Lays to high school seniors that are graduating from Papakoleo High School, I believe is the name.
And I'm glad you said that.
He was around for their graduation drive-by event and was putting Lays, you know, with his PPE on or personal protective equipment, and putting Lays on all the high school seniors. So, you know, great stuff. And if I put the link up for you guys to see, but I'll post it on social. But it's such a great piece on Pat Gassman. And honestly, I didn't know him personally, but you both had worked with him. Can you talk a little bit about him as a person? Obviously, he's like a baller, and you can definitely talk about that, but he just seems like a great high-character individual.
Well, I think Jay already touched base a little bit, but yeah, he is a high-character kid, really embodies the Alana spirit in terms of what Hawaii wants with their kids and all that stuff. And so it's just, it's fantastic to see and a good story to have and be able to talk about amidst all the things that we're kind of in right now in terms of that. And so, and he's really doing some great things. So, you know, proud that he's a men's volleyball player and in the family of that. And so really neat to see.
Yeah, that I think one of the neat things about each program is each program has its own personality, right? It attracts people of a certain breed or certain ilk. And when you look at Hawaii, a lot of those players are not from the island. They're from either the mainland or from overseas in a European country. And when they get there, the Ohana lifestyle, the feeling, the spirit of aloha, the aunties and the uncles and all the people that are associated with UH Manoa and all the people that are just on the island in general, it's a really big family. And, you know, Pat feels like he's a part of that, and for right reasons. You know, that's a really neat culture to be a part of. And I got to give kudos to him. I got to give kudos to his teammates. I know a couple of them joined him as well, and maybe didn't get the fanfare. But, you know, I've worked with a number of people that played for UH over the years. I've worked with some people that coached there. And every single one of them said, regardless of the outcome, they loved their time and their experience there because it was just a giant family. And the island really took care of them and made them feel like one of their own. And that's a pretty neat position to be in. So I think it was only a natural segue for Pat to feel like he needed to help out and step out. So good for him.
What's really cool about that piece is it was done by KITV4 or K Island TV. He's a Nā Mea Pono Award nominee, which my guess is it's some kind of community service award. So
best I'm glad you said that one too, by the way. Thank you.
I get to keep my announcing job, assuming that we get events back at one point. But yeah, so I believe it's a community service award. And, you know, it's so impressive that a guy that's 6'10 has an even bigger heart. So kudos to Patrick Gassman of University of Hawaii. The final piece that I wanted to touch on was the AVCA gave away its media awards. And I want a shout out to Scott Flanders of UC San Diego, who got the SID award. I mean, obviously, UC San Diego had a record-breaking year, and it was so fun to watch them do what they were doing to people. Did you guys see them? Like, I don't think you guys played them this year, did you?
We did.
No, did.
We did.
Did you get the better end of them? Because they got the better end of my team.
We did get the better end of them at their place, yes. After we got the better end of your team. So just to...
Thank you for that reminder.
No problem. I throw that out there. So,
I want to say this with the deepest and sincerest thanks to both you, Dan, and you, Jay. I was awarded the Grant Berger Social Media Award through the ABCA, I found out today. So, and I couldn't have done that without your support, your knowledge, your experience, expertise, but most importantly, your guys' humor. Because you guys gave me a lot of great outtake content, which could haunt you in the future.
Is it already? I think we'll be all right.
So, congrats.
It goes to the right people, Rob, and you deserve that award. I'm super sorry,
bud. That's awesome, Rob. Congratulations. Very well deserved. You've been doing a great job of driving men's volleyball this year, and we need you to continue to do that. It's super important. So.
Well, it helps to have such great knowledgeable staff with great personalities like you guys. And, you know, I, like you guys, love the game, but I have a particular endearing for men's Division I volleyball. So going to try my best. You know, I'm still waiting to see if Reed Pretty is going to reboot the net live in the second half, he calls it. But willing to just keep you guys in the spotlight because I really appreciate what you guys are doing to your programs and elevating the play to the levels that you have been because – you know, even I get to receive it sometimes. Every once in a while, we'll get a win too. So, you know, I get to enjoy that part. So, but hey, that does it for this episode of College Volleyball Weekly on the Viral Volley Podcast. That's Jay Hossick of George Mason and Dan Friend of Lewis University. Yep, they're still doing the plugs. No recruiting violations, by the way.